question. So just from what I know about the people I've met in Arizona and New Mexico and places like that, like, I feel like it's a big part of culture. And in Oklahoma, where I'm from, a big part of culture, people's culture, is to have those big, nice lawns, to have, you know, big houses, to use a lot of water, to take those really nice, long showers. So I feel like it is a really difficult thing to change. So I wondered if you have any idea of how as a country we might start to change that in the future.
Or maybe just as the region, you know, because we don't have, maybe we will, but we don't have those problems right now here. So, and those regions already are stressed to the limit.
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to get people in the area to actually realize there is a water crisis and that there is a strain on the water system that's down there. So I think that getting the word out would probably do a great load of good for a lot of people, because, well, I mean, we talked to a bunch of people that were just kind of walking around the streets. We went to a baseball game, and we were talking to a whole bunch of people there, and most people are just like, water comes out of the tap. I mean, what else am I supposed to think about? And to get across the idea that your water is being pumped halfway across the state to get to Phoenix, first of all, and then even farther to get to Tucson, and you're going up a couple hundred feet, and even beyond that, you're getting the idea that people have always wanted, I mean, the United States, it's kind of a culture thing for people to want bigger and bigger houses, and it's always been that white picket fence with the lawn type of idea that's just what you should aspire to. And to change that whole idea of what is wealth and what is great about living in a condo versus in an actual house, to get people to maybe change their views on that kind of thing, it's a very hard thing to deal with, and not everybody's going to agree with you, and not everybody's going to want to change. And to maybe just get the word out that is something that is possible, and that could be something, is just a great place to start.
Well, I want to thank you, all of you, for coming here and sharing water issues. To me, water is dear to my heart. I work on it, and I live it, and I drink it. thanks everybody for being here. One last piece of comment to say goodbye to our audience.
Well, I just wanted to compliment the students in the class for the incredible value of the production that they put together. It's, you know, sophisticated from a political point of view, but also from a technical point of view. And I just want to say, these folks in February had done no radio production at all ever, and to have gotten themselves to the point where they can actually do this, they should be just incredibly proud of themselves.
Okay. Well, thanks Tracy, thanks Ari, thanks Maggie and Elise, please. we'll be happy to have you again. This is going to be one of my last shows. I'm a senior graduating.
Congratulations.
So, but yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much for having us.
So thank you guys. Again, if we're listening to Sperio on WMBR Cambridge, and if you have any questions or comments, you can call us at 617-253-8810. And before we go off, I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show don't necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. We're going to listen to a song now, which is Árboles de la Barranca, and it's on the album Lila Down. It's on the album La Cantina by Lila Downs.
Music for Human Beings, next.
Enverdecido, es que no los han regado con agua del río Florido. Me puse a amar a un hombre así, con la ilusión de amar.
Música.
marhaban. Marhaban, fi music for human. I am a Dr. Jalas al-Sakran, and I welcome you. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. And life is sure unpredictable today. I'm joined today by Ivan the Mellow. Let's see if Ivan is there with us. Ivan, are you there? Ivan? So he appeared not to be transmitting with Ivan tonight. We'll try to have our engineer repair the link. There are layers of glass and wire between us and him. But perhaps we are joined by Professor Levine.
Are you joined by me?
We are joined by you.
And it's funny because I can see Ivan the Mellow, yet I can't hear him.
We can see him, but we can't hear him. Sort of like the stars.
I see him, he's gesturing wildly now, like a wild Siberian.
And what do his gestures seem to say?
I can't quite decipher them. They're a bit cryptic and Slavic. I am not an expert in the Slavic tongues.
Or the gestures that accompany them.
That's right.
We are also fortunate to have with us today the priestess Isis. Isis, welcome.
Thank you. You are indeed fortunate to have me today.
Isis, as the listenership should be aware, is perfect.
Yes, I am.
Now, just before the show, I was eating a little bit of yogurt. And I asked the priestess Isis if she would like some yogurt. I said, I have what I think is your favorite flavor, which is boysenberry. She seemed very shocked and surprised when I said this. In fact, incredulous that such a flavor of yogurt could possibly even exist. But I assured her, yes, I have boysenberry, and I'll go and get it for you right now.
And what was the outcome there?
Well, I brought her the yogurt and I showed it to her. I said, look, see, it says boysenberry. And then she said, oh, I thought you said poisonberry with a P. And the funny thing is, I believe even if it had been poisonberry yogurt, she still would have eaten it.
Excuse me. That was a very elaborate dream that you had.
Well, it's interesting what can happen when people are confused about what they hear.
I guess that's similar to our experience with Ivan the Mellow right now. We are confused about our sense of hearing, and only our sense of vision can repair that loss. Just as in the case of the yogurt, only by the priestess Isis seeing the word boysenberry did she know that the yogurt was in fact not poisonberry.
As you know, in Arabic, the P, the letter P, is not really used. so I can really identify with this sort of error.
Well, I was thinking this event made me ponder a bit about the nature of mass consumerism in our current day and age. And I wondered if a yogurt actually were sold as poisonberry yogurt, even if this poisonberry were to be the most delicious berry in the world, or even the most delicious food in the world, still the marketing departments would never allow this yogurt to be sold. I think this is just a comment on the current consumer culture and the fact that what we are able to obtain depends solely on what can be sold, what can be marketed, rather than being based on what's really in our best interest and what's best for us. How do you feel about that, Priestess Isis?
Well, as I reflect on what you said, I must say that I do agree. Although, as you mentioned before, I would have eaten the poison berry yogurt.
Right. And I've mentioned this several times throughout the year, that I am an advocate of pre-agricultural societies. I believe that once we as mankind switched from hunters and gatherers to agriculturalists and pastoralists, then began our spiritual downfall and our descent.
So do you believe in eating raw meat?
Well, no, it doesn't have to be raw, but it should be hunted by a human being. Once it's hunted, then we can eat it.
And give thanks.
Give thanks to our spirit and the animal spirit. And we can even drink the milk of the wild beast and turn that milk into yogurt.
Cheese.
And add collected berries to it, even poison berries.
Well, it appears that Ivan the Mellow's connection must have been restored. Otherwise, such strange music would surely never appear.
Здравствуйте, дорогие зрители.
And indeed, he is there.
I apologize. I was lost in the limbo for just a little bit.
The amazing thing is that now that we can hear him, we can no longer see him. It seems that only one of our senses is able to perceive Ivan the Mellow at a time.
I'm a very elusive creature.
So we have found. It's strange, too, because so many things are elusive. So many things, particularly imbalances, that always seem to exist. The greatest picture of the earth and really of all things in nature is a circle, some sort of loop, a cycle, and makes sense. Only a cycle really could exist and continue existing the way that the earth has existed for so long. But if you consider things in the modern world, it's really more like a line.
Or an ellipse, perhaps. I mean, the ancient philosophers all believed that heavenly bodies could only possibly be spherical. as Aristotle believed, the sphere and the circle was the perfect shape, and any deviation from the shape would indicate imperfection and flaw. Of course, with modern science, we know that the Earth itself is not a perfect sphere, and the orbit of the planets are not spheres at all, but ellipses.
Of course, with Kepler.
But that naturally raises the question of whether our pre-modern thinking about possibility of human enlightenment and perfection is perhaps to be revised in our day and age.
I myself am a postmodernist.
A postmodern New Age thinker.
Yeah.
Well, our operator is indicating that we have our first caller of the evening. For everyone else, if you'd like to join our ellipse, the number is 617-253-8810, and our operator will patch you through. Marhaban.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to the air.
I'm trying to get in touch with a station manager or somebody on the executive committee.
Well, let me take you off the air, and
okay.
I'll have someone handle that for you. It's one of those things that lines never seem to connect properly.
Well, I believe that as this great source of enlightenment and spiritual power on this show, we attract many questioners and seekers. And sometimes those questioners and seekers are really looking for something a little different, perhaps a station manager, and somehow their questions get directed to us. We're like a magnet for those who seek to know. And like a magnet, we attract from all sides towards the center. It's interesting. I had a dream last night that I was walking through the woods seeking contentment and meditation. And visions of my friends surrounded me on all sides. But whenever I turned to look at them, they disappeared and they vanished. I would walk and I would turn around and look at my friends and they would vanish. But I felt their presence surrounding me. Their spiritual energy enveloping me. Finally, after walking for many months and months, I grew weary, and I lay down on the Siberian steppes to take a nap. As I was napping, Ivan the Mellow woke me up with a rude gesture.
Perhaps you confused it with something else.
Well, this is just a dream, of course, so it reflects my own consciousness only.
And what a strange consciousness that you have.
That has been remarked often in my life, my long life. But I believe that all human peculiarities can lead to additional enlightenment. I know that, for example, Ivan the Mellow has many idiosyncrasies, but I strongly believe that every flaw and idiosyncrasy can be turned to one's spiritual advantage and turned into a weapon in one's spiritual arsenal.
Well, you know, I am perfect, so what else can I do?
Well, whether perfection is possible in our day and age, I believe, is still an open question.
Are you doubting me?
I have many doubts.
That is okay. I know that I am perfect, and I'm just perfect.
Well, I think what Professor Levine is saying, perhaps, is that trying to embrace the imperfect may be a way to spiritual enlightenment.
That may be necessary to understand that in our modern times we should embrace imperfection. Dr. Jalas, what do you think about that?
About embracing imperfection?
Yes, in our modern days where imperfection is a reality everywhere.
It truly is everywhere. And I think that it's difficult to handle it in any other way but by embracing it. Let's bring a new voice into this, perhaps a voice of imperfection.
Hello?
Oh, hello?
Hello?
Let's try that again. See how it is that imperfection seems to
Alice?
Follow us everywhere. Marhaban, you are on the air.
Jalas, this is Mahmoud.
Welcome, Mahmoud.
You don't remember me, do you?
Mahmoud?
Oh, think back to the days of university, my friend. Think back to the days of university.
Mahmoud?
Not too far long ago. Mahmoud Sharmuta.
I remember Mahmoud.
How are you, Jalas?
I'm doing well now that you've called me.
It has been too long we haven't spoken, my friend.
Mahmoud, for the other listeners, when I was in the spiritual seminary, he came a year after me, but we graduated together. So I cut his Achilles tendon right behind the ankle to prevent him from walking.
Those were good days, Jalas.
They were, Mahmoud.
How have you been?
Well, fine. Eventually they reinstated me in the class.
After the scandal?
After the incident.
It's been too long, Jalas. How's your family doing?
Well, they've all died.
Well, I sense a spiritual presence.
Well, I know when Dr. Jalas says died, he's speaking at least partially metaphorically, because his wife, of course, she did leave, but she joined the monastery. And I believe.
Jalas, do you still play tennis?
Tennis?
Yes.
No, I gave that up long ago.
Wow.
I think he is more of a player of spiritual and intellectual ping pong.
Well, you know, I realized that in tennis I would get so distracted by trying to control the ball using a telekinetic power that I was unable to really focus on the game.
How's your brother doing, Jalas? Hello?
I'm estranged with my brother. I don't speak to him and he doesn't speak to me.
Those university days were good days, Jalas. I don't think your viewers, maybe they don't know. That was when you were just getting into transdermal
mediation.
Exactly. It was not even a field back then. People were just exploring. You see, all the professors, that was back, I mean, Cairo then was very political on campus. You had the communists and the Nasserites and the Islamists.
And
all
the
of
Jews.
These different people. Right. And all of these, I mean, Jalas stayed away from that. He was more into his academics and his botany. And when the day came, he was pushing it. He was pushing it. His professor, your professor, they didn't like it very much, did they, Jalas?
Well, no, they did not.
No.
Everyone wanted to see someone else align, but I really felt it was more important to focus on oneself.
That's
and
right.
To improve one's interior, and instead of worrying about the outside world, and I always felt that politics was separate from science.
Absolutely.
Mahmoud, what was your field of study in Cairo?
Mahmoud studied hair waxing.
Oh, that's very important field.
Yeah, very, very
well,
important.
Well, yes, but now
especially
I sell
in
life
Egypt.
Insurance. Yes. But that was back then, yes. I was very... Because people very... Back then, it was very... you see, we were... Jarvis and I and the boys, we were not so much going the normal route. Everyone wanted their kids to be engineers. They wanted them to be study the doctor and things like this. But we were going different ways. Jalis was pushing his way. I was more interested in hair waxing, which provided some titillating conversations back when Jalis was first exploring his transdermal mediation. But you know, we developed that a little bit. We set up a boutique in Cairo. Then I went to Kuwait for a few years.
Is it true, Mahmoud, that you were the personal mustache waxer for Nasser?
Well, I don't like to talk about it too much, especially those days in the 70s when Sadat was assassinated. It was very, you didn't want to really wear this as sort of a badge, considering the political climate. But I moved on, you know, I was in Kuwait, and now I'm in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. Yeah, I sell life insurance, mostly.
Well, of course, most of our listeners can't see us in the studio, but Dr. Jalis Asakran has a very large head of bushy and unruly white and gray hair. And I've seen pictures of him in his youth where he had this massive black waxed oil-streaked hair that would fall down from the weight of the wax.
You've seen those pictures, yes.
Yeah. And yes. I think he had to use like several gallons of wax a day to keep that hair down.
Well, not several gallons, but at least a few bottles of wax, definitely. So, I mean, Jalis was very stylish back then. I don't know how he's dressing these days, but he was sharp back then. He was very sharp, both inside and I think outside too.
Well, Mahmoud, you know, things change as you grow older, and you begin to have a more expansive waist and perhaps gut, and you begin to have more gut than a Turkish butcher.
Jalis, I don't think they use this expression in English language, but...
It's fascinating to hear about Dr. Jalis's pre-transdermal past.
But you can all see, I think, how a person of that persuasion would have entered the transdermal area of study. It really was a very natural step for me, what I was then. And it's been a constant source of very interesting discovery for me since then.
Jalis was always the brain. He was always the brain of the group.
And Mahmoud, of course, was the brawn of the group. Are you still benching,
right,
Mahmoud?
I'm sorry?
Are you still benching, Mahmoud?
A little bit. I'm, you know, second string. Oh, you mean weights? Yeah, definitely. Not like I used to, of course, but, like I said, a few hundred pounds a day, you know, keeps the muscles strong.
As they say in New Age folklore, there's this ancient myth about the weightlifter who every day would add 5 pounds to his regimen. He would bench press or leg press or military press, increasing weights as he gained in strength. And as he gained in strength, so he gained in spiritual power and his ability to understand the circle. One day then, as he was bench pressing, he achieved such a high weight that it crushed him. And in that second of death, through the crushing weight, which corresponds, of course, to his crushing knowledge of the world. He died under the pressure of that knowledge and that weight.
Well, we...
Jalis, are you still cooking?
Of course, Mahmoud, of course. Not the sophisticated cuisine of my youth. And the tastes seem to have altered somewhat, and mostly a mung bean.
The tongue gets brittle with age.
The man cannot endure in his youth what he loves in his age.
Or as they say in Arabic, in his tooth.
When he grows long in the tooth.
In the tooth, yes.
So Mahmoud, can you tell us a little bit about when you sensed that Dr. Jalis was spiritually different from everyone else? Spiritually...
Well, Jalis always, I told you, he was a very sharp guy. And he had a certain, an aura about him, not like light or something, but the ladies, they were swooning. They were. He'd come into chemistry class, we had chemistry together. First, the ladies found him very charming. Well, very charming.
Mahmoud, let's bring a third voice in with us here. Welcome to the air.
Hi.
Marhaban.
Hi, I was hoping to join in on the conversation.
Oh, please do so. So you are talking to everyone and to Mahmoud here. Mahmoud?
Hi. My name is Phil, and I just wanted to discuss, I think the topic is embracing imperfections.
Yes, we were.
Is that correct?
We were talking about that.
Yeah, you know.
I just wanted to share... I don't know, what I think is kind of an inspirational story about embracing imperfections. My grandmother, she was involved in an accident about a year ago, and I took her for a walk last weekend, and she only actually, she has one leg actually, which is what some people might deem as an imperfection, but she thinks of it as a blessing, and I don't know what you think of that.
She feels blessed by having only one leg.
Right.
Is that a result of the accident?
Yeah, but it's so she has a prosthetic right leg now, but she said in going through the accident, she's learned to love her left foot that much more.
Well, we know what they say, that they say I felt bad for myself until I saw the person with one leg, and when I lost my leg, I felt bad for myself until I saw the person with no legs.
Right.
And when I lost my second leg, I felt bad for myself until I saw the person with no arms.
Right.
And then you began losing your arms.
And then I lost my arms, and I felt bad for myself until I saw the person...
with no head.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Well, the point, of course, is that sometimes when we lose something important to us, we learn to appreciate more what we have left.
Well, I think that's what Grandma Palooza was trying to express. She actually speaks only broken English, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can really identify though with that sensation. And there is also a saying in English, which is that which does not kill me makes me stronger.
Right. Or what I like to say sometimes is that which does not kill me makes me weaker and eventually kills me later in life.
It's always possible.
Right.
Always
and possible. And I think, you know, an accumulation of mistakes, you know, ultimately leads in you know, to your demise.
Well, there are
and I like, well, like I like to try to pace myself out.
Well, so it's interesting too that the very different sayings that we hear, because I heard a version of the saying that Professor Levine gave us, but it was something more like, I had no shoes, so I pitied myself.
Right.
Then I met a man who had no feet, so I took his shoes.
Because he didn't need them.
Because he had no feet.
Well, there are many truths in the world.
Right. Professor Tom Waits once said, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
The one-eyed man is king.
Actually, in the mystical Persian tradition, Rumi, the great poet, said you only understand something from the lack of it.
Right, and only in its absence do you have the ability to fully appreciate the essence of its being.
But absence is such a strange thing to consider on its own. For how many people, when reading a book, truly consider the avenues that the author chose not to take?
Right.
Or when regarding a painting, the viewer might consider the paintings which the artist chose not to draw.
Right. I once had a friend who I would describe, he would go out of his way to tell you everything what something isn't, for you to surmise on your own what it is.
He was probably pretty annoying.
And where is your friend buried now?
My friend is buried. He's buried in Plimpton. Well, he's scattered about, actually. There's a little in Worcester and some in Oregon. He got around, actually, post-mortem. But, the carbon remnants of his existence are really just his donation to the furthering of organic existence here on the planet. So it's really just a recycling process.
But again, we come back to this idea of a circle or an ellipse, this idea of closed ends, and that your friend, in his in his strange humor, became
right.
part of life again, and,
right.
and perhaps that strange humor did not continue to exist, but he
right.
contributes still to existence.
He once dated a Mobius stripper.
She would take off her clothes and immediately put them back on the other side.
Exactly.
And so she'd take off her clothes all day.
Right.
And it's very, very strange philosophically to think about.
And very right. frustrating to watch.
One can only imagine.
Right. But for every dollar that I gave her, I got one back. So it was, it was a self-regulating process. So, I didn't feel so dirty about myself after having spent a night with her.
I wonder how everyone here feels about having threads in their clothing that come loose.
Right.
That thread in your underwear that becomes undone a little bit. And you try to cut it off, nip it in the bud.
Mm-hmm. Then this is one of the things.
I never trusted it.
And then
never.
The next day, it's there again. It's
right.
Back.
See, I've solved that problem by not wearing underwear at all.
Yeah.
I've found that it's liberated me to a certain extent.
Well, I have to admit that it would make me somewhat uncomfortable to know that the people around me were, not wearing any underwear. But I had this brother that Mahmoud spoke about earlier, and we're estranged over an underwear dispute. The truth is, my brother would never buy new underwear. Like, well, that's not true. The truth is, he would never throw away the underwear as it became old. A hole would appear, still he would wear it, and several holes. Eventually, I imagined, the underwear would simply disintegrate and,
be absorbed. I mean, I have several shirts that have become so threadbare that the last day I wear them, by the end of the day, they no longer exist, and whatever remains has been absorbed into my skin.
Is that not an effective metaphor for our existence here?
Is that in spite of losing a leg or an arm, we continue to exist until we can no longer hold ourselves together?
Exactly. Like Grandma Palooza is just, she wasn't old, she's just becoming threadbare.
That's great, and it's a great thought. And I'll just tell you that when I have these loose threads or loose ends in my clothing, I actually take it to heart. and I believe that it's a message that I have to search and examine my soul and my life.
Mm-hmm.
And find a loose end in my life, in my past, that needs to be corrected.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
And this is really just, I guess really, I'm just, you know, life is really just a journey in which we reflect upon each other. And, you know, I just take and leave different ideas from people. And at what point does honesty and your willingness to be truly honest, even at risk of being offensive, at what point is honesty utilized as a weapon? You know, at one point should some things just be better left unsaid?
I think that it happens in many situations that it is not only better to keep silent, but even to actively lie, better than cause the kind of trouble that silence or the truth could cause.
Right.
For example, if you're asked by your son if you respect him, even if the answer is no, it's probably better to say that you do.
Right. Well, true. Now,
because you just
funny that you mentioned my son. My son is he's a tennis fan. He's somehow a fan of classic tennis, and his favorite tennis player of all time is Arthur Ashe, of all people, which I find to be very interesting. Because personally, I preferred Bjorn Borg, but
I'm familiar, unfortunately, with neither of these players.
Oh, okay.
Well, Arthur Ashe, of course, was a famous tennis player who had AIDS.
Oh yes, so. So, in the theme of embracing imperfections, however, I think my son has found inspiration in the Arthur Ashe story, and he's used him really as a motivator. You know, when you feel that sometimes all the cards have been played and you're down on your luck. You know, you look at people who have, who've gone through hardships that most of us really just can't even get our head around, and they continue to live their life as champions. And my son has taken some of these lessons to heart, and I find it to be interesting.
Kohler, I think it's a wonderful point. In fact, in Siberian literature, especially in the literature of the great Dostoevsky, the Klein bottle drunk is often the figure that we native Siberians choose to identify with. And this imperfection is part of this really thing that draws us as readers to this
right.
particular image.
In that theme,
there are some nights where I find myself in social situations and I can sense that I can sense my imperfections, and sometimes I like to drown my sorrow, and I sit there and I tell myself, Phil, you're out with all these friends. You've gathered these friends together, and we're all out trying to have a good time. But my insecurities just force me to. What I do is I have a tendency to leave. Right as the night is just getting going, I have a tendency to leave because I'm so insecure about my imperfections, I guess, unlike Arthur Ashe, or unlike my grandmother, I have a hard time embracing my imperfections.
Well, this all reminds me of a story involving Mahmoud, where he and I were out with some friends, and we were playing the oud, And as one of our friends was playing, the string would slowly go out of tune. And one might regard this as an imperfection. But it later came to me that our friend was playing a song that none of us knew. It was a different song.
It was more actually, Angelus, I'm sorry to cut you off here. I remember exactly what you were talking about. And you have a very good memory, because this is a this is a memory that hasn't been alive for me for 30-40 years now. But yes, exactly. He was playing. This was a song of the purple turtle dove. It's well, that's what he called it. It was sort of to resonate with the livestock and the animals around him. The birds. It was nighttime. Usually, we played the oud, so there were owls and different animals there who would all receive this very warmly. But to our ears, it was what's the word? Cacophonous, like garbage.
Oh,
like,
sure, right.
It was very, very, very like nails on a chalkboard.
Sure, but like Jimi Hendrix when he was rising to prominence in the. In the mid to late 60s, there were some people that would listen to his sound and say that, that all they heard was a cacophony of noise, when in hindsight, he's viewed as a pure musical genius who understood exactly how to embrace and amplify the imperfections.
I think they said that about the famous group from Liverpool, the Beatles, as well, when they first introduced atonalism.
Mm-hmm.
Into Western classical music.
Right.
And just because we aren't prepared to see how a new form is perfect in its own way does not, you know, remove any perfection from it. Perhaps somehow the humans are only an approximation of the perfect one-legged monopod.
Mm.
And you know, in spite of being shocked by the sight or the thought, perhaps that is really one step closer to perfection, or one hop, as it were.
One, right.
Now, with regards to this question about truth and whether absolute truth can be a spiritual weapon or a spiritual asset.
Right.
Now, from what I understand in my readings, there are three essential schools of thought on this matter. One is that truth for the enlightened being is an ultimate value which must be adhered to perfectly with no exception, and that any deviation from the truth will lead to a deviation in spiritual centeredness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second school of thought claims that truth itself is human invention that must be ignored at all costs, and in fact is a detriment to human creativity.
Right,
and our
right.
ability to create for ourselves the true nature of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a social construction.
Sure.
And I embrace the third, what I call the pragmatic point of view, which is that truth is useful when it brings us closer to reality.
And but how do you define reality?
Reality is the vibrating circle.
The vibrating circle? Because my friend Steve, he's spent a lot of time discussing with me the vibrating circle. He lives in Manomet. But I'm you know, I guess I don't know him well enough to understand whether he's talking about that in a spiritual or a physical sense.
Well, I believe
Can you explain that to me?
Well, the vibrating circle or sphere is something that we can all take part in together, and it's related to our common essence as humans.
Mm-hmm.
And when we partake in spirituality together, then we join that vibrating circle and we feel those vibrations.
Sure.
And we feel them at a gut level, at a level that's lower than consciousness and lower than words, lower than language, which is why right. we can only indirectly refer to the circle using language. And to really understand it, we must simply experience it.
Right. That which cannot be articulated.
Of that whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must be silent.
Of course, it's often the cone that joins the vibrating circle.
Sorry?
People that have been exposed to the vibrating circle, it's a very... Now, this is a term that I admit I'd never heard before, but I have been exposed to something like it.
Mm.
And it is immediately known to me.
Right.
Much as the word head doctor might make sense to someone, even if they had never heard it before.
Mm.
Now, can you inscribe a triangle in this vibrating circle?
I suppose it would be a vibrating triangle.
Something akin to a dinner bell.
Well, of course, the question here is the opposition between numbers and counting and quantities which cannot be counted, which flow. Any polygon, such as a triangle, has a finite number of edges and therefore is limited, whereas the sphere, of course, has either no or an infinite number of edges, depending on how you experience it, and therefore is a true representation of reality.
We've created a system of mathematics. We're calculus attempts to approximate the spiritual essence of the sphere. But I don't think a man-made system of thought can truly capture the infinite.
Well, of course, we know as New Age practitioners that every new scientific or mathematical discovery has been predated by tens of thousands of years by mystic practitioners who have already developed mathematical and physical wisdom through meditation.
Right, because intuition, true intuition and true enlightenment does not require proof.
Self-evident.
But it might be nice.
And of course, that is the reason why we don't adhere to Euclidean geometry.
Right, but all of our tools, such as language and mathematics, are just an attempt to communicate with one another. But when it comes down to its most basic fundamental elements, life is it's a solo mission, essentially.
And it's
Jealous, sorry, with your permission, I have to go. I just wanted to say my warm regards, and thank you for having me on your show. Hopefully we can talk again.
Well, thank you, Mahmoud.
It's been too long, and I heard about this through one of our buddies, and it's Ahmed. I'm not sure if you remember him, but he's been getting himself into some antics lately we have to catch up on.
Well, thank you, Mahmoud, and unfortunately, our time for the program is running to an end, so we have to say goodbye also to Phil.
Well, it has been my pleasure. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity, and I'm sure I can't wait to tell my grandmother that she was part of this. I know she's going to find that to be heartwarming.
Well, give her our regards, please.
I certainly will. So, Grandma Palooza, this one's for you.
And thanks also to Professor Levine.
It was great to be here again.
And the priestess Isis.
Thank you. It was great being here as well.
And Ivan the Mellow, Beyond the Glass.
Don't forget to embrace the Hilbert space.
مع السلامة from me, الدكتور جالس السكران, here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. مع السلامة.
For safety.
Number one,
cars and bikes. Four points for safety.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are